If you're printing to the LPT-1, try printing to the LPT-1.
C, colon, / Windows.
Page 99. What are you guys doing? You've been fooling with that thing for 3 days now.
Making it easy to use.
So we'll be more productive.
If it's productive much longer, we'll go out of business.
If you want a computer that's easy to use, there's still only one way to go.
The Colcast, the best 30-plus-minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Aaron Leiser. I'm your host. Joining me today, before writing for Cult of Mac, he was one of Chippendale's most popular dancers. Buster Heine is here.
Oh, hey.
I hear you still wear those cufflinks, too.
Sometimes.
Also with us, his wit lands just like his darts. Sharp, fast, and right on the money. Lewis Wallace is here.
There was no money last night at the dartboard.
Ah!
My friends in the San Francisco Darts League are very disappointed in me.
You better step up your game. You're going to get excommunicated from the dart community. Finally, he's back with us. He's taking a break from weeping and writing his new Tim Cook book to join us. I hear he's on death watch. Leander Cady's here.
Yeah, my suicide attempt didn't work.
Are you done with that damn book?
Not yet. Nearly. Yeah, I've still got a couple of chapters to write and a couple of chapters to finish up.
Oh, you're not done yet.
No, it's driving me crazy. It's awful.
Yeah, Lewis is saying they confiscated your shoelaces. I heard there's no metal silverware. took everything from your office.
And there's also the problem that what I dumped on the editor is also a complete mess. So there's going to be some editing work to be done, too.
So he's having a nervous breakdown as well?
It's a she, yeah.
Oh, she's having an... Oh, dear Lord.
I haven't heard from
woman.
Her, which is not good. I'm really nervous.
She's probably moved to China. So you're writing a Tim Cook. We should at least mention this because I'm sure a lot of people don't know this. You're writing a Tim Cook, a hotly anticipated, very important Tim Cook book, a biography, right, about Tim Cook?
Right.
It's going to document his rags-to-riches story.
Right, and absolutely. That's exactly what it is.
Is it? Wow.
More or less, yeah. He came from pretty, very humble, blue-collar background.
And to be one of the richest people in the world, no less.
Right.
And so I didn't realize the story process, the writing process, is so long and full of agony. And I've really enjoyed hearing how much agony you've been going through to write this book.
Well, good. But I'm glad you've been enjoying it.
Well, you always explain it in such an entertaining way. It's such a long process. So I thought the book was going to be out soon, but you're finishing it up now. But when's it actually expected to come out?
April 2019, and just in time for the new Mac Pro.
Gee, so what the hell? Why does it take a whole year once you finish the book to actually get it out the door?
Well, because a lot of it has to do with sales, and I think it's and the sort of the way that the book industry works, and it's all about marketing. They want to know which books to put their weight behind.
And
they're trying to make that assessment now. They're sort of gearing up for next season's sales cycle, and I don't know how many books they publish a year, but I think like in America there's 160,000 books published a year. Only a handful of them ever sort of really get any attention. And so she was telling me they want to see what they've got on their hands. They want to talk to their salespeople, talk to Amazon salespeople, try to get see whether what the appetite for a book about Tim Cook is, and if and see if people are interested, and if there is, then they'll market it.
I can't imagine people would not be interested in a Tim Cook book.
Well, no one really knows much about him. I was really, as I've learned during this process, he for most of his career he hasn't given many interviews. Mm-hmm. It's only the last few years that he's actually, come out from and been seen in the public eye, and of course It's been frustrating because he's the most private man at the most private company, so it's the typical challenge of writing about Apple is getting anyone to talk, and then it's even doubly complicated because they're getting to talk about him, and he's been really really private his entire career,
and so, he's their boss,
huh? Yeah,
and he's
yeah.
their boss, so who wants to say anything that could get them in trouble?
Well, I wasn't trying to dig dirt on the guy. I was interested in his career, how they built. I think he doesn't get the credit, but he really was instrumental in helping to save Apple back in the late 90s when Jobs returned. And he hasn't gotten the credit he deserves for that, because I think trimming their operations side was a major factor in Apple's resurgence. And You know, and then of course building the iPhone machine. You know, building the it's just the size of the Apple's operations is mind-boggling. It is, you know, it's huge. It's so big. It's difficult to comprehend. And you know, the way he built that before he became CEO, you know, was another part of the story that I'm really trying to get trying to crack. You know, I mean, Apple spends more than the Navy spends. Every 3 months, Apple spends as much as the Navy spends on a new aircraft carrier. In fact, it's two aircraft carriers. It's just gigantic. It is just so huge.
Wow.
You know, they've got like somewhere close to, I don't know, 30 or 40,000 people in operations managing the supply chain.
Wow.
30 or 40,000 engineers. It's insane. It's just, nothing has been this big in the history of industry. Anyway, so these are the things I was trying to figure out and then write up.
And are you going to get to talk to TC himself?
I'm still working on that. I had four official interviews down there at Apple Park. I went and talked to some of his colleagues, and so I'm still, you know, the long story short, I'm still working on it. I'm hopeful that I'll be able to talk to Tim. We'll see.
Okay. Well, if you do, make sure you get his favorite recipes for the end of the book. You know, because if you write a Tim Cook book and there's no recipes in it, everyone's going to be, first of all, confused.
Right. Yeah,
and second of all, you know, very disappointed that they don't know how he cooks his famous Tim Cook turkey at Thanksgiving.
Good point.
Yeah, we need to know that. That's the part that I need to know. Okay, well, we got a lot of stuff, a lot of Apple news to talk about this week. I don't even know if we're going to fit it all into the show. I'm looking at these show notes and I'm shaking my head. I don't think we're going to make it through all this stuff. So here's what we got. Apple is getting serious about Siri. And I know you just chortled a little bit and laughed out loud because we've talked about this before, but they made a big move to shore up Siri and make Siri a competitor to the Amazon and Google products out there. We'll tell you about that. We have to talk about what it's like to be an artificial intelligence talent in Silicon Valley. I ran into a story this week that talks about how insanely high in demand these engineers are, how few of them there are out there, how much money these guys are making, and it is mind-blowing. So we'll touch on that. But we're going to wrap up with Apple's plans to ditch Intel processors for Mac. This was a huge story this week. You probably heard about it. We'll talk about what this means. Lander has promised to talk for 5 to 10 minutes about all the all the details of x86 architecture and servers versus consumer client machines. You know, he's going to go really in deep, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm joking, of course. Before we do our first news story here, let me go ahead and say thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Now with 3 mattress models. When they first started with us, they had only one. Now they've got 3 mattress models, the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural shapes and curves. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night, and it's delivered right to your door in a small, how did they do that, sized box with free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada. But the best part is you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. After all, you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping, and Casper wants to make sure you are comfortable. Here's what you should do. Go check out Casper online. You can check them out at casper.com/cultcast, casper.com/cultcast. There are also other places where you can read reviews. I think Amazon is one of them. And see how much people love their Casper mattresses. They are always rated 4.5 out of 5 stars virtually everywhere you go. People love their Casper mattress. That's why I always say it's the internet's favorite mattress. And when you're ready to make your purchase, if you want to do a trial with a Casper mattress at casper.com/cultcast, use code cultcast at checkout and you will get $50 off your mattress purchase at casper.com/cultcast. Okay, let's start with the big one. Apple steals Google's AI whiz to make Siri smarter. Leander, I think this is probably the biggest story of the week.
Well, I don't know. Actually, you know, what about the chip stuff? That was pretty big, too. Yeah.
I think in my book, this one takes the cake because this shows that Apple is really getting serious about
right.
Siri.
Absolutely, yeah. So if you don't know the story, Apple snagged Google's AI whiz. His name's John Giandrea, I think. He's a Scottish guy with an Italian-sounding name.
Can you say his name in your Scottish accent?
John Giandrea.
Oh, my God. That was actually pretty good.
I think it's pronounced it. But anyway, he used to be in charge of Google's search and artificial intelligence, but now he works for Apple. He's leading the drive to make the company's Siri voice assistant smarter, a goal that a lot of people, I think, would agree is overdue. So the New York Times said that on Tuesday, Mr. Giandrea will run Apple's, quote, machine learning and AI strategy, end quote, and become one of 16 executives who report directly to Apple's chief executive, Timothy Cook. And this is the most high-profile move yet Apple's made in the ongoing drive to hire talent for the Siri team. He came to Google, Mr. Giandrea came to Google in 2010, where he helped make AI and machine learning part of all of Google's products, from search to Gmail. And now apparently he's going to do that for Apple. And apparently Apple is also looking to hire at somewhere near like 142 more engineers to work on Siri-related jobs. And that's almost twice as many as there were this time last year.
Apple's tired of getting clowned on. And they're right. tired of us making fun of Siri, especially on this show, because we know at least half the executive team listens to this show and uses the information within to make executive decisions. We know that for sure.
Yeah,
I can't share my sources, unfortunately. But I think they're tired of people saying that Siri sucks, and it does, and Apple knows it, and we've talked about that before. And having this guy on their team, this was Google's main guy. This was their main AI guy, and now he's over at Apple.
Yeah, it's a big deal, and reporting directly to Cook as well. That's an important point, I think, because you know he's not being buried somewhere down in the hierarchy, right? You know, he's at right there at the highest level, senior VP. He's going to have a bunch of resources, going to have a bunch of talent, a bunch of people working for him. You know, the power to make a big sort of decisions across, you know, everything that they're doing, and I think it's a testament to the fact that AI is, you know, like that old phrase that software's eating the world. Mm-hmm. Well, AI is eating software. You know, it's getting added to every single thing that we do.
I do wonder how ubiquitous it's going to be in the future, or if this is somewhat of a fad, and if AI is not going to be included or as important as everyone is saying it's going to be in the future, because a lot of this seems to be experimental. People are trying to build it into everything. It's like when you go to CES and everything has Bluetooth in it, and the forks do and the shoes do, and they're, you know, adding Wi-Fi to your underpants. It's like, we don't necessarily need all this. And it seems like they might be trying to figure out exactly how AI is going to work in the future. I will say there are some people out there like Woz and Elon Musk who are worried that AI is going to become sentient and take over and actually, you know, deploy nukes and bomb us all like in Terminator 2. I don't think that's ever going to happen. I think that is so far-fetched. AI is not anywhere close to being that intelligent yet, and I don't think it ever will be. I don't think a machine will ever actually be sentient. What do you think about that, Leander?
Well, excuse me. As I was telling you earlier, I've got a master's in artificial intelligence. One of the things I did was wrote the thesis paper was about exactly these issues. And there's no reason why, you know, intelligence is limited to biology, right? And theoretically, consciousness could be an emergent property from, you know, a sufficiently complex system. And it doesn't really matter what the underlying wetware is, you know, whether it's a biological brain or whether it's a bunch of transistors in a computer. Like, philosophically, there's no reason why consciousness shouldn't arise in an artificial intelligence system. So, but, you know, we're nowhere near that yet. These systems that they have, are relatively primitive, extremely primitive, you know, simulations of neural networks. And you know, the interesting thing is that they can learn, you know, associations between a bunch of inputs and create, you know, their own outputs. So it's a big change for the entire software industry, because, you know, you don't have to explicitly program something anymore. You can just point a system at a problem, and, you know, if it's trained well, it'll learn its own solutions. That's what's interesting and fascinating about it. I mean, it is fascinating, but there's no way that these are a danger to humanity. It's ridiculous.
For those that missed it, Leander glossed over it. We didn't believe him when he said this. He has a master's degree in AI intelligence. when I heard that, I thought immediately, okay, this is one of those degrees that you get when you write in. You send them a check for $100, and they send you back a fancy diploma. No, in fact, he actually has a real master's degree, or so he says. I'm not sure I totally buy
University
that.
University of Aberdeen. Not wow. too far from where, you know, Mr. J. Andrea got his education.
That's incredible.
Which is in Glasgow.
I think Lewis and I were both equally shocked when you told us that. And you've never brought it up before. How does that never come up in six years
no
of conversations?
I mean, it was a long time ago.
No
as well.
One's ever asked you, oh, hey, Leander, do you happen to have a degree in artificial intelligence that we should know about?
I know. It's kind of obscure. But it was a long time ago. I mean, I haven't thought about it for, you know, I mean, I hadn't thought about it for a while.
Yeah, that's from another life for sure. So hopefully in the next 2 to 3 years, Siri will start becoming much more intelligent and much more like Google's smart assistant. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? So let's talk about AI talent. I ran across a story this week when I was doing research for the show, and apparently it's extremely difficult to find people who are able to build artificial intelligence, program artificial intelligence, and the guys who know what they're doing are making a ton of cash. Fun fact, engineers with AI expertise are some of the most sought after people in Silicon Valley right now. And some of them have salaries in the eight figures. So millions of dollars some of these people are making. And that's because virtually all the tech companies out there are placing huge bets on artificial intelligence, banking on things like face scanning, smartphones, conventional coffee table gadgets to computerized healthcare. Autonomous vehicles is a big one right now. The typical AI specialists are PhDs fresh out of school, and some of them are people with less education, with maybe just a few years of experience. Maybe they're just working on this stuff in their garage. And those guys can be paid between $300,000 and $500,000 a year or more in company stock. In a court filing this year, Google revealed that one of its leaders of its self-driving car division, Anthony Lewandowski, a longtime employee who started with the company in 2007, he took home $120 million before leaving and joining Uber. And he's working with them now on their artificial intelligence. Here's the problem, and here is the point of this story for you guys listening. In the entire world, there's estimated to be fewer than 10,000 people who have the skills necessary to tackle serious artificial intelligence research. And if you're ready to make your fortune, if I know we have some younger people listening to this show, and that's one of the reasons why I like talking about this stuff, to maybe whet their appetite. If you're 10, if you're 16, if this sounds interesting to you, you can make your fortune, my friend, my young friend.
I know. This is like the scene from The Graduate. You know, one word, young man.
AI. Well, we're all too old and inflexible to learn this stuff now. Well, probably the other three guys. I definitely could probably learn it. But there have been a bunch of schools pop up that you can register for and actually learn this stuff online.
Yeah, you can just study 6 months at Udemy and then you'll be high, flying high.
You know what? I kind of wonder if that might be true, because I know a lot of people who, and we've talked about this before on the show, who took crash courses in programming and now are making, you know, $100,000+ a year taking a 3 week course.
I just looked at Apple's website. Guess how many jobs they have open here in the Bay Area.
How many AI jobs or just jobs in general?
Just jobs in general.
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
600.
10,000? That's it?
Well, I thought that was a lot.
600? That doesn't sound like very many for Apple. You just said they had 50,000 people in their operations division.
All right. I mean, okay. Well, I thought it was a lot. I thought that 600 jobs, that's not bad. And these aren't the retail jobs. These are all engineering jobs in Apple HQ. I thought it was quite a lot.
That is a lot.
That is a lot, but I would have expected it to be more. But I guess for purely engineering jobs, that's pretty good. So here's one of the other problems. There aren't enough teachers teaching this stuff, because every time a teacher becomes well-known, they get offered a job, and then they leave teaching to go work at Google or at Apple or something. And actually, I didn't even know this. One of the better programs in the U.S. that's teaching this stuff is at the University of Washington, which is like 2 miles from my house. And they said in the last several years, of the 20 of their artificial intelligence professors that they had, 6 are now leaving or on partial leave because they've been given these lucrative job offers and, you know, decide to leave and make their millions programming, you know, cars that run people over at Uber. Like, you don't see, that's, you don't even need to be good to, right, to get a job. Your car can run somebody over because it doesn't realize that it hasn't taught itself to stop yet. But you'll still make $300,000 a
bad
year.
Bad robot. Bad robot.
Well, before, I don't want to get sued, so I should also mention that didn't the company say that the AI intelligence or the system that prevented cars from running over people was turned off or something?
When?
This happened recently. Did you hear about the car?
Yeah, it was in Tempe, and they said it would have, like, she would have died whether a human was behind the wheel, or she would have got hit whether a human or the car was in charge.
How can they tell that? What?
Because she jumped out in front of the car. It's kind of like a party area of the town, too, so.
Okay, she might have been having a few ales.
Possibly.
Ugh, man. Okay, so if you're interested in learning more, there's a couple websites you can check out, fast.ai and deeplearning.ai. These are founded by former professors and I'm sure for a very high tuition fee will teach you how to program AI. And anyway, Fast AI and Deep Learning AI. Let's do a drive-by of some of these smaller stories, Buster. Should we start with future phones could boast curved displays and touch-free controls?
Yeah, it's going to be like Minority Report, where you just get these air gestures and make your iPhone do really cool stuff, apparently. Apple's working on that. So that's going to be really cool. You can just like wave across the screen and answer a phone call or scroll, I guess.
Not sure I'd use it, but okay. Yeah,
not sure. Also, they're working on curved displays. I'm not sure I get this one. So it says like that they're working on curved screens, but unlike Samsung's curved handsets, which curve down at the edges, Apple's would curve inward gradually from top to bottom. I don't understand what that means at all.
Well, I guess it would be concave,
like concave. Are they gonna make like a concave type of phone?
Yeah, but are Samsung's convex?
I guess they would be, yeah, because they do.
I don't know if they're convex, aren't
they? Really,
because
like,
they just
bent. They just kind of go around the screen, edge of the screen,
like the edge, right?
Well, LG had a concave phone a couple of years ago?
Oh, I don't know. Did they? That they would.
I think so.
God,
yeah,
it was probably ugly.
It was kind of like a weird banana phone.
Well, see, this is really smart of Apple because that way when they release it, people say, oh, it's just like Samsung's phone. They say, Samsung's phones curve down on the sides. Apple's curve from top to bottom, so you shut it. Totally different.
Okay. Well, this thing is going to be like, you know, I mean, I guess it would be good for putting in your back pocket, I guess, maybe, right?
Yeah, coddle your butt cheek.
Oh, that would be nice.
You'd like to keep it back there? Yeah.
But then you put it on a table and it starts rocking around.
Yep.
Ooh, yeah.
Like a Pringle.
What they should do is include like a massage mode so it just slips into your back pocket and you can turn it on vibrate on high and it just massages your cheek. How you like that? How you like that, Lander?
Not about it. Well, I do that anyway.
Yeah, well, there you go. Okay, iOS 11.4, Buster.
Oh, yeah, the new iOS 11.4 beta came out. It's not that exciting. It's got some stuff that the iOS 11.3 beta had in it, like AirPlay 2 and messages in iCloud and a bunch of bug fixes.
Messages in iCloud, I want that.
Yeah.
About 5 years ago.
Yeah.
The one thing didn't have that everyone was thinking it was going to have because AirPlay 2 is included is HomePod support. And it does. You can, or HomePod stereo support. And it does, but unfortunately the HomePod doesn't have iOS 11.4 yet. So I don't know what you're supposed to do with AirPlay 2.
Yeah.
Support in iOS 11.4. What can you do with it? I don't think there are any speakers that use it.
No, but you could still use it to on your Apple TV to play something on your Apple TV and your iPhone at the same time, I guess.
Okay, handy.
Okay, there you go. And I also heard they had built in support for the AirPort Extreme. No, the AirPort Express router, the one with the audio jack in it, so you'll be able to stream audio to the router and have it, you know, power speakers anywhere in your house, which is funny because they haven't updated that router in forever. I think it's been 2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about one of the other big stories that just came out today. TechCrunch is saying the Mac Pro is not coming till 2019. And the interesting part of this story is that Apple is apparently working with pros to determine how the hardware should work. So they're bringing in pros and showing them, I guess, what the hardware can do and asking them for their input. And Leander, you were saying that you thought this was kind of a strange development because they're bringing in pros and they're showing them how the hardware will work. Was that you or was that Buster?
Well, it was all of us, wasn't it? I mean, we were all kind of a little bit nonplussed by this. I mean, you know, it sounds like that Steve Jobs, you know, said that they don't do any user research, right? You know, the last thing, he would have had a heart attack. He would have been so upset, like, if they're bringing in, you know, pros to try and figure out what kind of products they need to make.
Right.
But I don't know. Maybe there's more going on, you know, that hasn't been revealed. But the way that the story was written, it made it sound like, oh, yeah, they've hired a bunch of pros, and they're kind of, you know, they're watching them. They're doing this kind of ethnographic research. You know, they're there in the bushes, right, hiding behind a table, watching these guys like they're monkeys or something, you know, seeing what they're doing and making notes. And then they go, oh, okay, yeah, I think we need a USB port there. It just sounds kind of absurd. You know, Apple was always sort of famous for figuring this stuff out for pro users. But I don't know. You know, so I was a little bit like, what the heck, you know? And then plus, the story is saying it was the new Mac Pro is going to be based around workflows. Well, okay. You know, it wasn't defined what workflows were. And isn't every computer sort of defined around a workflow in the most basic way? You know, it didn't make any sense to me, really, what exactly they were talking about.
It is an interesting observation, isn't it, that Steve Jobs would create the products that he thought people wanted. Well, not he, but, you know, he would lead the company in developing products that he knew people would want. And now Apple is kind of admitting that maybe we don't know what people want, so we're going to bring them in and have them tell us what they want, and then we're going to make a product that they say that they want. And let's just hope they don't end up with the Homer car.
Right.
The Homer car of Mac yeah. Pros. So it is interesting in that regard, but you know, that the hardware that they were creating for pros hasn't been what pros want. So maybe this is a good thing.
Well, there's a whole debate about that, isn't there? You know, like, it hasn't, I guess, you know, it's not what, the pro group is a big, that's a big group. It's a pretty big, diverse group, right? There's a lot of pros. And there's a lot, and you know, like, you can have a pro programmer, but what pro programmer, do they need to have, like, a super powerful GPU? Do they need to have, like, every port under the sun to attach all these different peripherals? Probably not, you know. But whereas, like, someone who's doing video editing or music editing, music production, you know, they do need that kind of stuff. So I don't, you know, and this is one thing I think they kind of pushed back a little bit in that story was that point, you know, that the pro is really a big market, and traditionally they've been served by having a really bare bones box, but they, you know, like a box that did everything, you know, right? It had every single connection you could possibly want. It had a load of slots, so you could put in all these different cards and all this different extra hardware. You know, it wasn't like they weren't making these decisions for the pros. They were offering them everything under the sun, and that was the decision they made with the more recent Mac Pros, like, to sort of, you know, edit that down a little bit. So they got to that sort of, you know, almost that absurd level where it's just opposite, you know, offering a bunch of Thunderbolt ports and nothing else. You know, so anyway, what was the point?
I don't know, but I hate that they arrived at just Thunderbolt ports. That drives me crazy. And taking out some of the pro ports, I'm going to go on a rant here. I'm going to stop myself before it begins. I hate just having those Thunderbolt ports. Let's just leave it at that. I don't like having adapters for everything. I hope that the next pro machine that they release, MacBook Pro and the Mac Pro, include ports that we all love and that we all use, regular USB ports. The SD card slot needs to make a comeback. Okay. Before we dive into the last story here, Apple's plan to ditch Intel processors for Mac. One, we forgot to make this announcement at the top of the show. I knew we were going to forget. We are going to do another live hangout on Friday, not tomorrow, or not when you're listening to the show, most likely, but next Friday. I think it is Friday. Ooh, is it Friday the 13th? It is. It's Friday the 13th. Ooh. At 12 p.m. And 12 p.m. Pacific time, I should mention. So come hang out. We'll have some laughs. We'll have some gaffes and maybe talk about the Apple news a little bit. And if you have any questions, we can answer those. And, you know, just have a good old time with each other. You can chat with us in real time, which will be nice for us because we can actually interact with you guys, which we always enjoy. So that's next Friday, the 13th at 12 p.m. And before we move on, I also want to say thank you to Molecule, a new sponsor, Molecule, for supporting this episode. Imagine if your phone was the same as it was in the 1940s. Well, that is exactly when the technology you were using to clean your air was developed with the invention of the HEPA filter. Thankfully, Molecule has introduced a breakthrough science that is finally capable of destroying air pollutants at a molecular level. Molecule's Pico technology goes beyond HEPA filtration. It captures and completely destroys the full spectrum of indoor pollutants, including those 1,000 times smaller than what a HEPA filter can catch. In fact, in a study of 49 allergy sufferers presented at the American College of Asthma, Allergy, and Immunology, I deserve an award for saying that, Molecule's technology provided dramatic, statistically significant symptom reduction within a week of use. One customer said she was able to breathe through her nose for the first time in 15 years. Molecule's technology has been personally effective and verified by science, but most importantly, it's been tested by real people, and Molecule has helped allergy and asthma sufferers around the world better cope with their conditions and significantly reduce their symptoms. For our listeners, if you want clean air, if you want to breathe better at night, if you want to stop waking up with sinus problems, runny noses, allergy issues, head on over to molecule.com, M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com. Try one of these units out. You can enter code CULTCAST at checkout. You'll get $75 off your first order at molecule.com. Again, that's M-O-L-E-K-U-L-E.com. Okay, the last biggest story of the week. This one was huge. Apple plans to ditch Intel processors on the Mac. This story both excited me and made me very sad because I love my Intel processors, and I hope this doesn't mean that Apple is going to be neutering the MacBook Pros and all their other Macs, going for power efficiency over pure horsepower, which is what I always look for in my Macs and computers in general. So here's the story. Apple is pushing forward with plans to ditch Intel's processors in favor of its own chips, according to a new report that claims that the transition away from Intel CPUs will likely take multiple steps. Bloomberg says that Apple's executives have already approved the project to make the Mac run on ARM-based processors by 2020. Moving to its own chips inside Macs would let Apple release new models on its own timelines instead of relying on Intel's processor roadmap, which is a great thing. Making the move to ARM chips won't be easy, though. All software would basically have to be rewritten for the new processors, which certainly wouldn't make developers happy. Plus, I'm sure a lot of people just wouldn't do it. But Intel chips have stalled in major progress, leaving little reason for many to update from older computers. This is one of the biggest problems with Intel chips right now, and this is one of the reasons why I have not updated my MacBook Pro since 2013. There's just no reason to do it. The new Intel chips are not getting any faster. And Apple keeps releasing these new computers, and they're marginally faster than the ones before it, maybe like 7, 10% speed increase in some applications. So there's just no reason to buy a new MacBook Pro, which I'm sure is driving Apple crazy. Also, the A11 Bionic chip inside the iPhone X, if you remember, it beat the 13-inch MacBook Pro, the 2017 MacBook Pro, the fastest version. It beat that computer in Geekbench scores, particularly in the single-core scores, or it might have been the multi-core scores. Anyway, one of them, it matched the score, and the other, it slightly beat it. So it's just insane to think how fast these chips have become. And no more waiting on Intel. Do you remember the MacBook Pro was delayed forever? And I think it was because they were just waiting for Intel to come up with a chip that they could put into the MacBook Pro to make it faster, to make people want to buy it. So if Apple has control over their own CPUs, they won't have to wait on Intel anymore. Plus, they'll have even tighter integration with your Mac, iPhone, iPad, and other Apple devices, which could be great for software. Those are my thoughts. Leander, did you have any thoughts about this story?
Well, it's funny because it's, around the same time as what we were talking about before, right, with the Mac Pro. Isn't the timing, doesn't it seem to be, coincidental? And then also it's related to that, those earlier rumors about Marzipan, right, which is the Apple somehow trying to meld or get a common code base for iOS mm-hmm. and macOS. Mm-hmm. So I think, that clearly they're looking at a big transition in the next couple of years where I think they're going to, somehow try to find a way to mesh macOS and iOS closer together. And it would allow, it would be really useful for developers and for software. You'd be able to run, presumably macOS, or maybe a developer could make a universal software that would run on both platforms.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be one app store, there'd be sort of one code base, you know, developers wouldn't have to make macOS versions of their software and iOS versions of their software. Anything that Apple did for iOS would easily port over to the macOS as well. Because I think macOS is clearly like in the kind of like, you know, it's being neglected, isn't it? You know, Apple's putting its weight behind iOS, the iPhone and the iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And macOS is kind of like in this sort of maintenance mode. It's just sort of sitting there, not really getting developed. And this I think would solve a lot of problems if they could somehow mesh the two together. And then, of course, you know, you'd have a common hardware base too, presumably, right? Which would make things a lot easier,
mm-hmm,
too.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it seemed to be pointing towards, to, you know, that's what I thought.
I don't know. I mean, I love what they're doing with their mobile chips. So why would you be worried that they would come out with something that's just, you know, crappy?
I don't think it's going to be crappy. I guess my concern is, Apple seems to be prosumerizing their machines and making them fancy but not powerful, and expensive but not as heavy duty and commercial grade as I would prefer them to be. And the idea of putting an ARM chip into a MacBook Pro, for instance, worries me, because ARM chips aren't known for being powerhouse chips. Intel makes the fastest chips that are out there, and unless Apple has something up their sleeve and has some remarkable desktop grade chip that we've never seen before, putting an ARM chip in a MacBook Pro is concerning to me, because it just means it's not going to be as powerful as other desktop PCs that are already on the market.
Everything that they sell, though, that's like, the, you know, this thing is, the performance on this is fantastic, right, and blah, 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 blah. And, I mean, I don't see them going, hey, we did this, we made our own chips, and guess, they're 50% slower than what you can get from Intel.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to do it, you know. They put these big, gigantic screens up on their things that say, you know, 10 times faster than last year, 50 times faster than Android, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That it's, I don't, I mean, I to be honest, I didn't even read this whole story yet, because I'm just kind of going, oh my God, you know, what are they going to be doing, you know, 2 years from now? I actually have faith in them that they're, if they do that, they're going to do it because they have a way to make it just killer. I don't think they're going to just say, oh, we're going to switch just to switch and make everything, you know, more complicated for developers and everything else. I think that they would do it for the right reasons if they are in fact doing this.
It's just hard for me to imagine a MacBook Pro with an ARM chip in it that is faster than something that Intel provides. Intel's chips are beastly, especially their new ones. They have six cores now instead of four. And, you know, an ARM chip, I don't even know how many cores it has. Maybe two. I think the max might be two right now. And they are the chips that are used when you are needing high efficiency and not a lot of horsepower. So,
right.
And then the other thing is the walled garden. You know, Apple is continually vertically integrating, and this is just one of the other big steps of them vertically integrating all their components so that they control everything. And then I think about, well, what about apps? You know, if Apple takes over manufacture of the chips, they're going to fine-tune their machines to work even better with Apple software. But what about all the other third-party software out there that people want to use? And are these developers going to be expected to rewrite their software to run on Apple's new chips as they were when Apple switched from PowerPC to Intel, in 2005, I think they did that? And so the big developers will do that, but the smaller developers probably won't. So, I don't know, it just raises all these questions, and it sounds like it could be exciting, but it also sounds like we might end up with a machine that's neutered in some ways.
Well, some people are really worried this is the end of the Mac, right? Because mm-hmm. It's such a small part of their business these days, you know? Mm-hmm. And clearly the future is in, like, you know, mobile devices. Maybe they just want to give it up, and this would be the end of it. You know, they're just going to go for low-end sort of consumer machines. Although, you know, they made that, the fact they're talking about the pro market today makes me think that, you know, that's not true.
Maybe not. Or what they'll do is because if Apple is going to be putting ARM chips in their machines, the ARM chips will be less expensive, especially because Apple will be developing them. And so maybe Apple will lower the price on their, they'll take the iPad approach, right? They'll have really cheap, laptop computers, and then they'll have like these insane $15,000 professional computers. And no middle ground. You have to choose which one you're going to go for, right? It's like, do I want a piece of crap? Something that's clearly not aimed at professional work, or do I want to spend $15,000 for an actual work-grade machine? Anyway, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Hey, don't forget, Friday the 13th, 12 p.m. Pacific time, we're going to be doing our Cultcast Live Hangout. We hope to see you guys there. I'll include a link in the show notes so that you can check it out. And it will be a live stream on YouTube, probably on my YouTube channel. So stay tuned for that. All right, that's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. If you want to come say hi or talk to us about any of the stories we mentioned on today's show, we are all on Twitter. I'm at Airfine, Buster's BST3R. Leander is Al Kenny. Lewis is at Lewis Walsh. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. Lewis, you want to take it since I cut your story?
Next time!
We just want to hear your voice.
Yeah, everybody there you go. Does, sure.
Not made up for it, don't you think? Leander's having flashbacks to the gym this morning.
Huh?
Are you still getting salmon at your gym for your trainer?
I haven't for a while, but he did give me a bit, the other day.
Oh. Is the other day?
What's that?
You haven't gotten any for a while, but you got some the other day.
Oh, I don't know. I know I'm not making sense. It was a couple of weeks ago.
Are you totally fried?
Yeah.
Perfect for the podcast.
Yeah, great.
0 cents made.
Well, at least people won't notice anything unusual.
Right, exactly. What's the